Hi, this is Ken Sagos, a.k.a. Ken Cade from A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3 and Part 4. Now let me tell you what I do. You see, when I finish kicking Freddy Krueger's ass all over Dreamland, I kick back and relax at Nightmare Jughead Podcast.
In and out of your consciousness, like a bad dream you can't wake from, this is the Nightmare Junkhead Podcast, a horror podcast that ponders the true limit of the concept of unlimited salad and breadsticks. My name is Greg D.
I'm Genius McGee.
And on today's episode, off-brand April finds us heading across the pond as we engage in some 70s shenanigans as we talk 1974's Watch Out. We're mad. And whether you've sung in a mixed choir or not, you can listen into our show. Simply search for Nightmare Junkhead wherever podcasts are played. Hit subscribe, and when we drop our latest episode, we'll download directly to your listening device of choice.
All up in your hole.
You notice Biscuit's giving me the Blair Witch treatment right now?
He's giving you the cold shoulder. He's giving you the Mr. Freeze. Stay cool. You won't let me on your notes. Chill out.
It's kind of bothering me. I'm not going to lie. Biscuit, your approval means everything to me. Oh,
so now he's like, fuck you then.
He's going to say, you mentioned me on the air. This is what happens to you. Well, I guess you can see us trying to be friendly like we're doing with Biscuit out on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Nightmare Junk and on both Blue Sky and Facebook at Nightmare Junkhead. But it is only on the Book of Face where we have an events tab, which leads to
shenanigans. And beer and hot dog shenanigans.
And as this episode is going to be releasing on a Friday, April 12th, if you find yourself in the Kansas City area, head on over to screenland.com where they will have your hot dog and beer shenanigans.
Yeah.
Taking care of indoors.
And that's it.
For now.
You know what? And their hot dogs are delicious.
As you know, literally, I can smell it.
Mm-hmm.
As we just took in one. But the Friday this episode releases, you should head over to the Friday Night Fright tab because our latest Friday Night Fright is, without a doubt, not a horror film.
No. We are stretching the boundaries of... It's 40 Seconds Street adjacent. It's Beaded Curtain.
Oh, and the Beaded Curtain will be out for this one. And we've talked about it before. We've watched the movie... And that is to say, Samurai Cop with a crowd. I cannot wait to see how that plays.
It's going to be wild. Bring your action jeans and your action wig.
And I will, and we'll talk about this in the intro, but this is one of those movies that for me, it's all about intent.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about the Kung Fury.
And the Turbo Kid. And they wanted to make... a fun, sleazy action movie, which was the style of the time.
They wanted to make a buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
They basically had the Lethal Weapon template.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
let's throw in boobs and violence, but with not enough money.
We've got a beefcake with long hair.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the maniac cop.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have indeed some buxom babes that are willing to get bare.
Yep.
And
a helicopter.
But the intent... was to make a good movie.
And they made an entertaining as fuck movie.
We will all be laughing with this movie. Now, question. Did you see the sequel?
Mm-mm.
So I attempted to watch it, and I'm kind of shamed to say that I didn't get through the movie.
Oh, shame.
Reason being.
Uh-huh.
Kung Fury.
If you're...
they knew what a success the first one was.
Mm-hmm.
And they played into it, and they purposely tried to not necessarily make... I think the intent was different.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. The second I realized Tommy Wiseau was involved, I was like, okay, I see where we're leaning.
All seriousness goes out the window when it's like, oh, hi, Samurai Cop.
I guarantee...
I did not run drugs to Miami. I did not...
guarantee someone out there loves it.
Yeah.
And perfect. It just wasn't my cup of tea at the time. But what was and what is the original Samurai Cop.
Mm-hmm.
Hope to see you out. Now, that being said, looking forward to the following Friday Night Fright. Without a doubt is horror.
I saw this in the theater.
I did as well. And walked away with appreciation of so many different things. But hope to see you for Idle Hands, 1999 classic.
The Sawa is family.
Celebrating its 25th year of horror. And Rodman Flanders sounds like a Simpsons character, but is one of the more underrated directors out there. Friend of Panic Fest, actually.
Yeah.
Now, that being said.
Ooh, and then the week after that, Don't Make Me Drink Alone.
We'll get to that. They if they've been to the tab, they know what's going on. But the other repertory screenings that are actually happening on the weekend of the 12th, and the latest in the filmmaker series, and if his new releases are an indicator of anything, I know there is a large contingent that go to Screenland to watch his films, because a Wes Anderson film always brings them out.
I haven't seen all of Wes Anderson movies, but the ones that I've seen, I've liked because they're fucking charming. They're just that quirky, weird enough, and with the color palette that's just... I saw Grand Budapest Hotel, Royal Tenenbaums, Life Aquatic, Moonrise Kingdom. And so I've seen a few of them, and I'm like, these movies are charming.
There's an aesthetic to his movies. And playing that weekend are going to be the Royal Tenenbaums.
I like that one.
And the Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I like that one, too. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. A little family-friendly cartoon action.
And then actually closing out on the repertory screenings are going to be Freaky Friday with Jamie Lee Curtis
and Lindsay Lohan.
Yes.
I've never seen that, but I've seen that my way through it. I've seen the Haley Mills one.
The OG?
Like the Disney movie of the week and shit. Yeah, let's stick together. Yeah. So,
well, I guess that we hope to see you body swapping out there with the Screenland film family. But genius, if I'm talking film family.
Hey, Bellies.
We have our own little collection of film family members hanging with us at Patreon. Mm-hmm. And regardless of their tier, the day this episode releases, they're going to actually be hearing my thoughts on a recent film that came out via Shudder. Might have to put it as a Shudder shadow because I think you would really enjoy it. Have you heard anything about Destroy All Neighbors?
With Alex Winter, where yes. He plays like this like monster dude, and it just gets gnarly from there, and it's got like the dude from Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It looks cool.
It is cool. It also plays really well if you're into prog rock and practical effects.
Oh, check and check.
And leans into lunacy. And it's very much a horror comedy.
Nice.
But very surreal.
Like Slimeball horror comedy or like Goofball horror comedy or Icky?
Icky would be appropriate, but a lot of fun. In fact, I had a blast watching it.
Good. We need more fun horror in the world.
That's if anything that has proven, you will lean more into the fun, especially. So I think you would have a lot of fun leaning into that. Now, if you'd like to have access to that. And a whole lot more, including, in this case, our thoughts on Dario Argento's Deep Red.
La, la, la.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. No.
It's we had that conversation earlier today, just out of nowhere.
Well, no, because we were on our way to watch the new King Kong vs. Godzilla movie, and the Fantomas version of Rosemary's Baby came up on my little shuffle thing. And you've got Mike Patton doing the la, la.
There's something inherently creepy about la 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 sung by like kids or almost kids, especially if they have a tinge of the British in them, because British kids are fucking creepy. I mean, like, they could be the nicest people in the world. I love me some Love Actually, but them kids is creepy.
So across the board, it's kids are creepy, but depending on the region, they can go to like max creepy.
Right, seriously, because I mean they would now. Like, if you saw the twins in The Shining, they're like, come play with us, Danny, forever. You know, that's not that creepy, right? If they had a draw. It's creepy, but at the same time, come play with us, Danny. Or like, we know all your secrets. Fuck all that noise. Seriously. And you know what? It's the British kids. So as Sir Michael of Jordan doth say, fuck thine children.
Well, and being that we are in Britain, in this case, with Argento, it leans into that.
Right?
But we had a blast revisiting it.
Yeah, it was. Fucking,
oh my god.
We need to do like Jallyway or something.
Again, Tristan, thank you for that. But yeah, to have access to that and so much more, head on over to patreon.com/nightmarejunkhead, where April is actually going to be a kind of a good sampler of what we have to do. Because we opened with a request and review, and that's actually the main perk of our top tier. you can request for us to watch. And how many phenomenal films have we watched through that?
Not a stinker in the bunch. Not a stinker in the bunch. You all listening have excellent taste. Excellent taste.
To the point where and there are certain like phrases that find their way into the podcast, uh-huh. the vernacular. But my favorite part is when like songs.
Fucking, I was rocking out that the other day. I'm washing something in the kitchen. I'm like, whatever, there's a party and all the chicks in there. I ain't the kind of fella just to stand around and stare. Right? I'm just singing it like.
And being there the moment music hit you and to see the reaction wouldn't have happened without that particular request.
Right,
so, Brian, thank you for that. No, sincerely, we've had some incredible experiences through that. In fact, this particular episode started on the I've Seen That feed,
mm-hmm.
One of the 600-plus films that I've watched for the first time since we started Patreon.
Bravo, good sir.
Via many genres. And because it's not horror, because it's not catcalling right now, it found its way into off-brand April. And I love legit that we started last week with the first time watch for you.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of a weird revisit for me. It won't pick up on the mics.
That's
but
too bad. It's cute as shit, too. She's all wimbly nimbly.
Little Davey is definitely on the prowl right now. But we started with a film from 1986 called Running Scared.
Uh-huh.
Go back, listen to our thoughts. But it was a weird rewatch for me.
It was Always Sunny in Chicago.
And
great.
Particularly because of the presence of one Genius McGee. Now, that being said, we legit love the buddy cop genre. But we also love, and that's action.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, across the board. But we love getting silly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We love fun. Getting slapsticky. The more cartoonish the chaos, I think the better for us.
Oh, absolutely.
And then when you can get like a dynamic duo involved, when you have interplay, we talk about wacky wordplay, it then goes to that next level. That is to say, do you have, like, who's your five genius of your dynamic duos? If we ever wanted to get like a really big audience, we should go the Marin route.
Uh-huh. Okay, so.
Or I should say, do you like the dynamics between duos?
Oh, absolutely. The duos.
Hint.
Right, you have to have the dynamic duos. You have to have like somebody to play off of, no matter what your shtick is. And that's the good thing about duos and to an extent trios, because I love me some Three Stooges. But at the speaking of slapstick, you know, but at the same time, when you're dealing with duos, you have to have a certain like duality. You have to have like the opposites attract mm-hmm. of some sort to truly make it, especially when you're leaning into the slapstick to make it work. For example, like one of my favorites is David Spade and Chris Farley. Right? Just the way that they work off each other, they play off each other, it works. Because even when they went to try to do the same shtick with different people, it never quite worked the same. But you put them together. Look at, let's see, who's another good one? We have, going contemporary, Edgar Wright and,
Simon Pegg?
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah.
I love me some Nick Frost. Now, those two have crossed over without each other, but when they work together, they work phenomenal.
I was going to say, the Venn diagram occasionally locks over. But you mentioned it. It's all about the chemistry.
Right.
And knowing not necessarily the roles, but understanding the interplay.
But you also have to have that physical aspect too.
Well,
because that's another element. You look at some of the best duos between Abbott and Costello, and even going on like Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, there's stark contrast, so you can definitely tell which character is playing by who or who is doing what action. Abbott and Costello, you had a skinny dude and a big man. You had Farley yeah. and Spade, you had a skinny man and a big man. Look at McCarthy and Sandra Bullock. When they get together, you have a big person and a skinny person, right? So look at who we're going to talk about today. You know, we have Bud Spencer, a big person, and Terrence is a skinnier person, yeah. or a different frame person. So also you have to have that not only mental but physical dynamic too for to make it. I mean, look at us.
For only two factors involved, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Right.
That's what it sounds like.
And
to
you
me.
Have to have the chemistry, and you have to have that, be able to play off of each other and be able to like run with the joke. And especially when you have such opposites, for it to go together and for them to work, That's the key. That's the hard part to pull off a duo.
That is to be said, then. You have to assume there's a number of failed duos out there that it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the attempts that the magic they tried to recreate with Farley and Spade, it just didn't work.
Well, look, I mean, not to say that it was a failure, but look at last week with Running Scared. Mm-hmm. There was no more buddy cop movies featuring Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. You know, not to say that that was a bad movie or anything like that, but I mean, it just didn't take off.
There's a reason it went and it stayed under the radar. But that's why I think, if anything, it's more beloved by a certain audience, because it's like anything else, especially with cult films. Like, before it reaches the popular consciousness, there's a sense of, like, belonging with it.
Exactly. And we're just talking this right now. We're just talking about slapstick. I mean, look at Action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you would have any Shane Black movie. While that, yes, that can lean more into comedy, but you have to have the dynamic of either the straight man or the wild card. You know, you have to have that certain, like, everybody, like you said, has to play their roles and has to know with the situations. When you have the genre mix-ups, like, I love me some Dead Heat. I love me the interplay between Treat Williams and Joe Piscopo, because he's always a treat,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and going back to Shaun of the Dead. So even in the horror genre or the sci-fi genre or anything like that, when it comes to the duos, you have to be able to walk that line between being serious in a wacky situation or be wacky in a serious situation.
You know what? And it's really funny because we didn't grow up, you know, internationally. One of my favorite duos of all time, and it's right there in front of us, is Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise.
Fucking look at that. Check and check.
Everything you just talked about, but also there is just something that can never be matched in terms of the chemistry,
mm-hmm.
whether it's on the screen, off the screen, all the shenanigans that you only hear about that become like Hollywood lore.
Right. Putting whipped cream down people's pants and pissing on them. Just nuts.
And that's to be said, then, what was your and what is your familiarity with Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer?
Nothing. Nothing. Not once. Not absolutely. Until recently.
Right.
Never been on my radar. And like,
I'm talking like recently, within the probably the last three years. Okay.
So
appropriate.
Right. So I never really knew of him. Like, if you say Terrence Hill, I'm probably like, oh, was he an old cowboy? Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, or you say Bud Spencer, I'm like, he sounds like an old comedian from like the 40s, like Fatty Arbuckle or something, you know? So like, okay, cool.
Even in the names, you can envision something
mm-hmm.
based on those particular tropes of the duos
right?
that are put out there. Well, they were put on my radar probably back in around, because I'm still pretty recent to them, probably back in 2003 or 2004. Had some friends of mine had me watch They Call Me Trinity from the get-go, from the music. And if you've seen Django Unchained, right?
Uh-huh.
Tarantino. At the very end, when the house is burning down and you hear,
oh, and he's doing tricks on his horse?
That's the theme from They Call Me Trinity. But he comes in, not riding his horse, but the horse, he's made like a little hammock in the back that he's being dragged, and he's just sleeping. And his character is ultra lazy.
The laziest cowboy.
But he's then paired with this giant brute of a man. And immediately, when I'm watching this film the first time, I'm thinking of Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise and these cannonball run as shenanigans that they're getting throughout, because it was shenanigans. They mm-hmm. were fist fights where they were employing all the things on set that's off the set. It was good natured. And I was laughing throughout of it, but then there were also elements where I'm like, Jesus Christ, that looked dangerous.
But it's extreme violence, enough violence and enough stunts to put any action movie to shame, but done with like love and care and goofiness.
It's shown up on, I don't know if it's a Geico commercial, but there was some insurance commercial where they used clips of Trinity Is My Name, where he's doing that thing. We saw it with the cowboy, we were slapping him and drawing the gun.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a commercial. So it's out there, like, people are kind of aware of it, but they're not necessarily aware of it.
Well, and also I think it's like you said, it's a cultural thing. Like, some of the greatest comedians and the funniest shit in the entire world has not yet found its way overseas. You know, I mean, look at Japanese stunt game shows. They're hilarious, right? Look at like comedians like Cantinflas in Mexico or like Benny Hill. Sure. Now, Benny Hill does have a lot of crossover appeal, but he's huge in Britain.
He's technically international.
I mean, you know, so like there's a lot of great stuff. I mean, very few things have that crossed over appeal. Yeah. And I think like with these Trinity movies, only a select few that makes it kind of like this cool niche genre.
And because the Trinity movies are very much spaghetti westerns, they're Italian made, and they fit within all the traps of Italian spaghetti cinema. And we come back to the word cool.
Yeah.
There's something always inherently cool with them. However, but there's also something comic with them, cartoonish in so many ways.
Well, and see, that's another thing. Well, like, it's comedy can be universal, but it can also not be everybody's cup of tea. Mm-hmm. Like, if you try to show somebody a Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer movie, they might not get a giggle. It all depends on their sensibilities, because it's a particular brand of slapstickian humor. It's Three Stooges, it's Looney Tunes, it's Mad Cappery, it's Naked Gun shit, you know? So if that's not your brand of humor, it's not gonna play well.
And we get it. Because that's the one thing throughout. In fact, I should say this, my journey with this particular movie.
But hold on, the defensive humor, right?
Oh, yeah. And
the one thing about movies like this, it's, yes, it's Italian, but like Looney Tunes and like the Three Stooges, you don't need to speak English to get it. You don't need to speak the native language to totally understand and see the intent, because the archetypes have been ingrained in us since the cartoon days.
And you even talk about sound design. How much of the stuff made you giggle because of the sounds that were made?
Yeah, the bonks and the little like snide remarks in the background. Some of the ADR in the back. And then you're going to get some of the old greatest hits of what makes those charming overseas movies from back in the day, with the overdubbing ADR, with the bright colors, and with the, like, probably somewhat normal to them, madcap to us. So that's another way. If you don't like it, if that kind of shit ain't your bag, I understand. But it's universal, because you're like, okay, so they're at this wacky ass nightclub having a ball. Cool, let's do it.
So you're telling me it's Italian, it's screwball comedy, it's a duo. I mean, there are so many factors going in where this could play badly. And I was lucky enough, I did watch this. It started as a first time watch on the I've Seen That feed. Mm-hmm. And it was, I will never forget it, because it was one of those nights I was upstairs. I think Lola was still with me at that point. And I was just on my laptop, and I wanted something 90 minutes ideally and under. Went through Amazon Prime and I saw Bud Spencer, Terrence Hill film, Watch Out We're Mad. I'm like, you know what? I've seen two other movies, seen the two Trinity films, love both of them. If I'm not good within the first 5 minutes, I'll find something else to watch. Now, first and foremost, song hits. I'm like, that's a very catchy tune there. I hope I get to hear it again. That'd be nice.
Wish granted.
But then the magical moment happened for me, and that's when it said, and Donald Pleasance. So I knew going in, it's a Terrence Hill, Bud Spencer film, but and Donald Pleasance.
Whenever you see the and Donald Pleasance, you know it's going to be wacky. So Halloween, if
anything on this feed that I've been introduced, including where you were then, because I love this movie so much. I was like, you know what? We need to do this in the backyard. I need to have as many people I can watch it. And we paired it. We did a Donald Pleasance double feature. Do you remember what we saw beforehand?
American Rickshaw.
Yes, we did. Do you remember how that ended?
With him going, brothers and sisters, what I want. And just freaking out. Fucking.
He turns. Sorry, spoilers.
Turns into fucking Peppa Pig at the end. It's wonderful.
It's crazy.
And I'm Donald Pleasance Pig. Just like going off
the nuts. So we started going off rails with that, but then was able to transition that. Now, had I shown you Watch Out We're Mad beforehand?
Yes. Yes. Because you came and you showed me one. Okay, so
I showed you a clip. Did I here, not?
You showed me okay. a, so you showed me a clip, and then you showed before the background screening. So you showed me a clip, and I instantly fell in love, because I'm like, this is a human cartoon. And I
remember the clip.
Oh, yes. I think I do. Oh, yes. I remember that there was two clips. One, you showed me the Phineas K. J. Jim clip.
Certainly.
And then, which we'll talk about later. And then you showed me the choir scene. And I think, you talked earlier about the Undertaker and his pals theme. There, only a few people have seen it. When a song hits just right, and my brain is like, oh, you're going to know this song forever, right? It's going to play constantly in your head.
Yep.
I get this, like, glint in my eye, and, like, my eyebrow raises, my ears perk up, and, like, it's, like, in the memory banks now. The earworm has laid its eggs, and every now and then, it'll come up.
And the funny thing was, watching your reaction, because it was very layered, but it escalated quickly, because I think there was that initial reaction of ooh, this is striking a chord. But then it started with a giggle, and then it escalated. And to a point where you were howling, and you were like, it's shenanigans, as you're hunched over. And I was like, wow, I know I've got you in the web of this one.
It's live action cartoons. It's live action. I love live action cartoons and anything close to a live action cartoon you can get. And even like when cartoons cross over in the real world, like fucking Cool World and fucking Roger Rabbit, I eat that shit up. Like Naked Gun, that level of cartoon, when done right, it can be the pinnacle of comedy. The Three Stooges, any of that shit. That's why, like, the classics are classics for a reason, and they're universal. Talking earlier about Benny Hill, you don't have to speak a lick of English to understand what's going on. You just have to see, as we see later on in this film, a time and a half speed makes everything funnier.
You talk about not necessarily having to know the language.
Mm-hmm.
You had an incredible moment with this movie recently after you had been exposed to it, where you had some friends out of town.
Yeah. So
this blew me away.
So anyway, I think we finished watching it or talking about it or something. Meanwhile, my mom had a guest from Mexico come in, a whole family who we've known for actually a few years. And the dad of the used to come over every now and then and stay with us for a little bit. And so he went off, got his family. He has his daughters and his wife, and they're all here in the bar having a barbecue. And for some reason, I'm like humming something, and he goes, what's that you're humming? And I'm like, oh, it's this thing I just recently watched. Have you ever seen Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill? And he goes, no. And so I pulled up the thing, and he goes, I know this. I've seen this movie. I love these guys. These are hilarious. And then he goes to his daughters, come here. And the daughters, they're like 14 and 12 or something, and they're watching, and they're like, and they just kind of go off. Meanwhile, me and the dad are sitting there just cracking the fuck up and just like laughing, and he doesn't speak a lick of English, and my Spanish is salty at best. So
the coincidence, though,
right? The fact that the movie's like that, slapstick humor, again, you don't need to speak the language. Yep. That's why cartoons are universal. Yep. That's why goofiness, that's why physical humor is universal, just like practical effects. There's something great, I mean, I love like witty banter. I love like smart humor, and I even love like fart jokes. But at the same time, physical comedy, it's when done right, can be like the peak of comedy, because you have to put not only thought like a joke, but you have to put your whole body into it. And as we see in situations like this and like Jackie Chan, it's dangerous as fuck. So like,
there's a weird journey you take, because you take cartoon leaps of danger where there are several points of the film where like, good God.
And you put in the real world. Example, in this movie, as soon as after Oliver Onions comes in, then all of a sudden we're introduced into like wacky races, but for real. And some of the stunts are George Miller level of danger.
Yes, they are.
Their fucking Grant Page is like, oh, these kids in Italy know how to do it right? And it's madness. Meanwhile, like this jaunty cartoon.
The music. That's going to be the place to start.
Marvelous, because, and hilarious.
As you said, as I experienced, from the second you hit play on this movie, you hear it. And this is going to be, I'm going to go ahead and put a little musical medley right now, where we're going to take a little bit of the choir.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think, the first taste. But then it's the Oliver Onions that will definitely close in and see what you get throughout the film.
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three, ha! Come with me for fun in my bargain. Come along, let's go for the hell of it. See the faces round the wrong looking. Wonder if they'd like to come for a ride. I'll bet you anything. Now she's
you're welcome, because you're never getting rid of that now.
Never ever get away, bum bum. Never ever get away, bum bum. Doom buggy. Let's
do it twice.
I feel like a king. I feel like a king in my buggy. Bum 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 bum.
God bless it. It's wonderful. It's an earworm. And they got their money's worth in this movie. But it's really funny because I was watching, again, one of the 600 some odd films I've watched over over on Patreon. There's a moment, and I'm pretty sure it was an Italian film, where I heard that melody or that theme in someone else's score. And I'm like, how dare they? How dare they?
How dare they steal from the Oliver Onions vault?
And it was a brother duo that composed it. I'm like, I'm going to look these guys up and report them.
Who are these brothers thinks they are? Fucking Smothers Brothers? Get out of here.
It turns out it's Oliver Onions. I was like, oh, okay.
A nom de plume.
But it was such a nice surprise, and I wouldn't have just... This film has spawned so much in the podcast, I think.
But speaking of music, going back to music, the choir, I think it's I can't remember the Italian name, the full of it, but I remember taking a deep dive into it. It's actually an older piece. I can't remember if Oliver Onions are, like, not necessarily the classical, but it's called, like, the Ballad of the Firemen. And, like, that you can go see choirs perform la 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 la. I don't ever get fancy a lot, but if I was like, I'm going to the night of the choir, the night of the opera, and see some dignified symphony music, and I sat there and like, la 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 la, I would love it. I would love it, because that, between that and the ballet, when the bear goes around in the little car, I love that shit. So,
well, we've talked a little bit about the music, the cartoon logic. One of the things that I think is a highlight of this film, and there's so many of them, and it's basically the shenanigans and the set pieces. And we've talked about the fact that you love cartoons, and this movie, once you mentioned it, I now can't kind of unthink it or unsee it like this. Did you ever watch, I know at one point it was like Daffy Duck's Fantastic Island, Bugs Bunny's 101 Rabbit Tales.
And then like Daffy Duck's Quack Busters.
Where they took pre-existing cartoons.
Greatest hits and made it a movie.
Around it, almost like an anthology.
Exactly, with the, like this weird wraparound where they would do that. Yeah, no. Once we talked about it, it is. This is a live act. Well, like with like a lot of cartoons and they make movies like that, this is a live action version of it. It's just... Each set piece, it's its own little separate cartoon with like a narrative through story.
With the humor and the danger and the practicality and the time spent for it. There's so many of the set pieces, they keep going. And you're like, God damn, we're still racing.
Like the next crazy scene after the big race, because the race, like you said, took a long time, and there was violence galore. There was violence, and then that one thing where you know they had a big stunt plan, but it went wrong, and there was the water engine flooding. He goes, "What am I supposed to do?"
You see this Italian stunt driver like, I
don't
know.
Let's keep it. That's great. It's funny because I bet like fucking where the cameraman's cracking up like. In fairness, I'm laughing too the whole time. I'm just giggling.
One of the laughs we got was the surprise jump where one of the red cars comes out of nowhere,
right? Like jumping holy over shit, to, where'd you come from?
There's so much crazy crowd work where for a second we're like, Jesus, are they in danger?
Yeah.
Like I know they're a long way away, but. As we've discovered, they throw the 1.5 speed
exactly in this. Some of it, but instead of the splash zone, it's the crash zone. They got to keep everybody far back. But
terrifying
cars are flipping over while Benny Hill's playing. Meanwhile, you're expecting Yakety Sax, but you get this right. Very again wacky racers ish. This is great cartoons, and then when the violence hits, it turns into like Popeye cartoons because. People are getting punched through windows, and meanwhile they're trying to just eat sausages and peas. It's ridiculously fun.
We have a great scene where they're taking not hot dog and peas, but hot dogs and beers.
Yeah.
And as a fan of, again, you've just feasted on a hot dog. You're not known. When you were a drinker, were you a beer drinker?
No, I wasn't a beer drinker when I was a drinker.
So to see them, and more importantly, to hear him, especially Terrence Hill's character, the kid. Oh, and he's eating something. I think he's eating every single hot dog we saw.
Every beer, as much foam as possible.
There's a lot of foam. There's a lot of foam in that beer.
But even when I drank, I was like, that'd be a foamy beer. No, give me something else.
But then you mentioned the chaos going on around them and their indifference to it, not reacting and just letting it happen, elevates everything to a point where again we're just like. Cackling,
and the reason why he moved, it wasn't because he like had weird premonitions, it's because the other guy was smoking a cigar,
which was established early in the film
and comes into play multiple times. Like that's the thing about these, they are Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck with all their mannerisms and everything. No joke is wasted.
No running
gag is not used throughout. Oliver Onions, you never know when the Dune Buggy song comes on, but you know shenanigans are going to ensue. Well, and you never know when he's going to put somebody's cigarette out and then beat somebody with his big ass open hand slap.
And the fact that there is a video game.
Slaps and Beans. It was $1.99 in the PlayStation store. It's fun as fuck. It's like Final Fight, but with Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill. And
they incorporate all of those specific details of the slap.
The bonk. The over the hand bonk. And then like
the agile ability of one Terrence Hill.
Kicking people around like with lightning speed and punching people fast. Like, again, very Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, where they each have their own unique fighting style. And they make jokes of it throughout. Like the one scene where like, not yet. And they keep like putting the mini boss away.
We'll get to you.
Speaking of that poor mini boss, that dude number two, he's the Elmer Fudd of the cartoons.
The menacing that they do to him. The bumper car scene is an all-timer. And you want to talk about from the personal anecdote that I know you have to just the pure silliness of it to the casual driving abilities of them. And the comeuppance of him from bullying everyone in there, which I'm trying to remember when and where we talked about this, but you yourself have seen the effects. And listen, we're anti-bullying across the board, but especially when it comes to bumper cars, man, because I always had a little bit of anxiety going in there because I've seen when they find the weak one and then everyone starts bumping the weak one. Yes. So I'm aware of that, and I'm like, oh, F that. I'm going to sit afar and laugh. But you had an instance where something like that happened, did you not?
I love me some bumper cars. I take out all my hostility and my aggression with bumper cars.
It's therapy.
When I know that like people aren't going to get hurt for the most part, I'll fuck shit up. So anyway, so we're worlds of fun getting regional, right? My little brother, he's maybe about 8, at the time. We're getting on the bumper cars. He's just old. He's just old enough to like get in there and do that stuff. So we're getting in there, and this kid, maybe about 12 years old, comes in like is fucking with a boom, hits him real hard, and then hits him again and cuts him off, right? And so my brother's like looking at me, and I'm like, yeah, he just fucked with my brother, right? And we both had this look in my look in each other's eyes, and we're like, let's do this, right? So for the next 3.5 minutes, he was our target. We fucked him up. Like he,
you gave him all your attention?
Yeah, we did. I'd like go around people just to fuck with them. My brother would boom, bump him from the left side, and then I'd come around, boom, bump from the right, and like just like spin around and boom, bump him around again. We'd like circle him and shit, right? He's like, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry, right? No, boom, right?
He drew first blood, genius.
You fuck with me and the family, you get fucked with. This is like next again. I'm like so, me and Liam Neeson's.
Did it play that much sweeter then? Especially the first time viewing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, first of all, I love bumper cars in real life and in movies because, you know, either one, it's just going to be there for like just one quick sight gag, or two, like it's going to come into play and people are going to get fucked up and I'm ready for it. And like, again, the amount of shit that they pulled it through this guy. One, you have the fact that he doesn't fit in the bumper car. Even Bud Spencer is up in the bumper car. But this guy, for some reason, he's not obeying the safety rules.
No, he is
and
not.
That's his first mistake.
Yep, no,
like, if the person running the bumper cars was doing his job, he'd be like, hey, get down. Sit down, right. Put your seatbelt on. But no, he's on top of it.
So principle of forfeiture, he's the second he blown
like
out
shitty
like that.
Teens, right? Yeah. So there you go. And you fucked around. He found out. But then second of all, every time that they hit him, like for some reason the sound was just exaggerated, and it's like this like a crash.
They do a snippet of the 1.5 speed just enough. It's like a little frame, 1/60th of a second of a frame, just enough. You go, wait a second.
So between the 1.5 speed and between the sound effects, the overly done sound effects, it's just so wonderfully cartoonish.
It is
that it gave me the biggest fucking giggle, and just the whole carnival scene. And like every time that guy tried to do something, Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill were habitual line steppers to this dude. Wouldn't raise a fist to him, never said dick to him, and just like boom, boom, like out Fozzying him. When he was like trying to be the Foz at the boat machine, like, hey, everything.
It's spectacular. There and like, can we talk a second for the look that Bud Spencer gives? That
his exasperation and frustration is by far the best running joke. The fact that every time he tries to do a little moment of peace or something that he enjoys, something happens just like, ugh. And even when he's fighting, if something doesn't quite like, ugh.
And the problem is, I laugh every single time.
Every fucking time.
From the first time I watched it to the last time I watched it. There's just something.
It's perfect.
It's great. It's the perfect foil. He's fitting that particular role. Of the chemistry between this duo.
He's the straight man. He's the one where, like,
because
he gets put upon because he's like, he has to clean up everybody's mess.
And when Terrence Hill is your running buddy,
he's the Bugs Bunny because he's the one always going after girls. He's always the one, like, breaking the fourth wall. He's always the one that's like, will teleport out of thin air to, like, to finish off a gag. You know, he's the one that has all the magical powers. It's almost like, kind of like if you, not Asterix and Ublius, because like they're, Ublius is not, and Bud Spencer's not dumb. I mean, that's the thing that also works. They're not dumb. They're not like the Three Stooges level of like dumb. They know what the surroundings and they're aware of their surroundings, but they just interact with them. They're superheroes in a roundabout way in this normal world.
Yeah, they're playing chess. Everyone else is playing checkers.
Because fucking Bud Spencer is nigh invincible in this movie. The only thing he can't do is fly.
Let's talk about where that chussle comes from.
Jesus Christ. I was not expecting Bud Spencer to be a former Olympic athlete and just to look like chiseled
Superman. Look like something a Greek god would have like been intimidated by.
Right? And he's just sitting there swimming like he's fucking the original. If they made a 1940s Aquaman, he would be in the running. Perfect. You know? So
you realize that's the foundation of where that chustle comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's beefy.
Yeah, and now he's
brute
beefy.
Strength.
Now he's beefy and bearded. And all that extra is just layers and levels of beer and hot dogs that it just and beans that just have become this padding. So no matter what can like phase him and hit him. He's like the thing. And it's clobbering time.
He's pretty nimble too.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he's out on the dance floor, whether he's utilizing, and I will say the next set piece is the weight room scene after they've menaced him throughout the carnival.
One of the best instances of him going like is when he's over there watching Terrence Hill do like flips and shit on pummel horses and using the gym bars to do shit. He sees a pair of open hanging rings, so he runs and jumps. He just jumps and it just comes out of the ground. He's like, and he just uses them to use them as like fucking brass knuckles to punch people. And people are getting fucked up, but they're not dying. They're getting up and they're like saying, oh, getting away.
Like in a final fight game, they're not blinking all the way red yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they still got something on their life bar. But the it actually even opens with that guy with the boxing gloves shoving the big old
rocket ship,
the mat, or the big old, what do you call those?
Jesus Christ. The punching bag.
The punching bag. And he literally rips it down
off the ceiling.
And that, to me, if you're not giggling at that, then the entirety, the brilliance, the choreography, because it's the slaps, it's the punches, it's them utilizing everything, but it's also the performers and how they're selling everything.
Yeah, he uppercuts somebody and the dude's flying and then hangs on winds up hanging on the rafters. There's people where they're using their head as punching speed bags, right? There's people getting tossed around and flipped judo or Greco-Roman style, tossed up in the air, getting punched in the air, kicked.
There's a lot.
Gymkhana shit.
Yes.
There's some pummel horse Gymkhana shit going around. People are getting like
both of them, Bud and Terrence, and both of them.
He's got those handle dumbbells,
yeah.
And he's over there just whacking people. Boonk, boonk, boonk. Meanwhile, it's again, you have the brute strength, and then you have the speed and agility. And again, it's the two dynamics that work well from each other.
And the physicality of it all.
It's super physical.
It's spectacular.
It's wonder-
spectacular.
It's
and
the amount of fight choreography that went through, and again, the thinking of the like, okay, what would be funny? How can we pull this off? How can we make this as real as possible with nobody getting hurt? Although, again, whether it be the car crash scene or whether it be in any of the fight scenes, some of that shit connected.
Oh, you can, and listen. I think it was pretty well known. They were not big on like gun violence. They wanted to be kind of slapsticky and cartoony. But of course, accidents happen.
Well, look at the scene where like right before the gym scene, when like Elmer Fudd, the gangster, really fucked with them. He just nonchalantly pours gasoline all over their car and just throws a cigar on fire. And they're driving through the streets of that small Italian village with their car ablaze.
Down multiple flights of stairs.
Yep.
Around people.
The car work, the driving in this movie is insane. So you have this fight choreography and drive choreography. And for nobody to really get hurt, and at
that
least
we know of.
Right? There hasn't been a cursed film episode of this movie yet. So hopefully that's a good sign. But It's really impressive the way that they can blend all of that, because that was a full flame for a long time to go into a car wash gag.
It serviced the gag, did mm-hmm. it not? And it's extended, as are all the set pieces. The movie runs about an hour and 37.
And it's all jokes.
I think it could be an hour and 30 and be a little leaner and meaner if you cut back on some of those. But honestly, I think that's why I like it. It's that we do stay with all these gags and the set pieces. We're like, oh, he's overhanding. He's bonking a guy again. And there's that slap. And shit, I'm giggling again.
And now they're jousting in motorcycles. The motorcycle
they go Knight Riders. Yeah, George A. Romero up in this. In fact, the bikers themselves, the look they have, that does look like something straight out of like an Enzo Castellari film.
Yeah, it is. I was like, it's the leather daddies because they came all up dressed up in leather. But when Bud Spencer just picks that dude up off the bike by his helmet and making him run while he's driving, while he's going with the bike, that was crazy. That's some insane stunts. The dude on the bike that got hit with something and wound up getting his head stuck in the tree.
Into the tree. No, this is the point where some of the gags, and I think they're doing a lot of all their stunt work,
mm-hmm.
all the stuff in the weight room, all the stuff on the bikes, a lot of them, you can see them driving.
Yeah.
But there's a moment, and there's multiple moments where it's not so much the first crash when the guys get launched off their bikes, but it's what they launch off into and then plays at a speed and a half.
There's
where
two
they go
of them.
Into the sled.
There's two. There's three, actually. There's the wood sled. There's the mine cart. And then there's the horse.
My God. And then
how many comes in threes?
And then finally, the hunter. The hunter.
They don't use gun violence, but they'll sure make a fucking gunplay joke. It's hilarious. Because again, it's something you'd see out of cartoons. They set it up.
They set it up.
Think it's something random and goofy where it won't come back into play, but it does. For example, like, so one of the guys on the bike goes and flies off the bike, which scares a bunch of birds in the bush. Boom. While this Mr. Magoo-esque hunter comes up with the big thick glasses, can't see, can't hear, and blasts somebody, right? Tries to blast the birds.
Mm-hmm.
Looking around like, what happened? So later on, one of the bikers comes, he winds up flying in the air, pops the hunter like Duck Hunt style, blows the dude away, and just like, boom, looks around like, what going on? Went down. It was Hans Molman. It was Simpsons shit.
It was
just so wonderfully goofy and like out of nowhere that you didn't expect it, even though they set it up, the joke earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And again, that's the funny thing about it, because it's so Mad Capri, you don't know where and how far they're going to go or what they're going to do next. And it always is surprising and shocking in the best, funniest way.
Do you know what's shocking is the fact that we're this far into the show and we haven't really laid into the great Donald Pleasance.
See, that was my next note. I put carrots and milk.
The choices he makes in this movie.
99999.
And I'm curious if he was honored to work with Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill, or if it was just like, it's a paycheck.
I think at that point it was a paycheck. But the thing about Donald Pleasance, and while no matter what you hear or whatever story, I heard he's grand. I heard other things. But at the same time, he was always bringing his A game, no matter what. He never half-assed his performances. He was bringing it all.
He is operating at a level that is intimidating.
He understood the assignment.
Oh, you got it. He's the guy in the back, like the teacher's pet, that not only does he understand the assignment, he's doing extra credit for the assignment.
Right.
That kind of extra research, like, dude, stop.
Can I make my character only eat carrots and drink milk?
Sure, why not?
I'll do it six times.
And that's, I think, for me, the humor of it is the fact that there is no other sign of him like this being something that's an act. And in fact, his whole character is this like
evil advisor. Professor.
Yeah.
Yeah. How to be evil.
And I'll cross over to the Media Rewind podcast. The main boss in this movie,
mm-hmm.
the guy that has hired Donald Pleasance to be his advisor, make me a better bad guy, he sounds like one of the characters.
The woeful serf, like...
Did he not?
I hope he doesn't come and bite me in the ass again, right? I hope I don't, have to pay for a doom buggy.
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
And what was he wearing when we first see him? Like Easter
this
PJs?
Weird Easter robe or something? Because he was just it was. And
did you also notice he only ate bananas?
Really?
He was only eating bananas.
I saw him eat a lot of stuff. I know that he stabbed people with forks. That was his thing.
Fork stabbing.
Madcap villains for a madcap world.
So I'm glad because, like, it's funny to see Donald Pleasance go this loony. I've watched him do a couple of sword and sandal flicks
mm-hmm.
where he played like a wizened advisor and he brought the normal gravitas.
Absolutely.
But I've never seen him like play it this silly before.
He's like the Naked Gun. You don't expect like uppity people, not uppity, but like fancy schmancy people. Like, so, who would expect Ricardo Montalban to be whack?
To be great.
You know?
Well, I guess it just it shows his level of talent.
Mm-hmm.
But I just loved every single thing he did. Just every single choice he made was spectacular.
Just how squirrely he is, and just like just sitting there all snice noodly with the dude, and then when he's tripping people.
Do you think had he played Blofeld and Bond at that point? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he had.
Oh yeah,
I can get a little bit of that.
That's probably the probably a subplot where that he's that's why he's giving lessons on how to be evil.
Well, let it be known. I appreciate the fact that he is in this movie, because everything worked. Even if he wasn't in this movie, if there was no number two advising the boss, this would still be a next level movie.
But he makes it that much better.
It's the draw where everyone goes, oh, that guy. And especially people I think that would listen to our show
mm-hmm.
would really appreciate
the fact that they live next to a carnival, because why not?
And well, of course, why not? Because you can get a creepy clown.
Yes, you can. Angels to some, demons to others.
A thousand phobias.
A thousand fetishes.
And this is where you get him putting damsels in distress.
Habitual line stepping.
Which we saw last week with our with running scared. What the level and the limits these guys will go to.
Because she's an acrobat. She's doing her job. And her job is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And what does he do? He uses a skill to kick rocks to knock down the podium that she's trying to stand on so he can save the day and catch her. Like, that's pretty shitty. And then they fall in love. And then they go in, like, on the weird Ferris wheel.
Which, by the way, our apologies. You want to get real regional and gross?
Yeah. I feel bad for the person who has to be the jizz bumper on the late shift at our new fucking Ferris wheel in Kansas City.
Go see the movie Clerks if you want to know a little bit more about that world.
So, because you know that shit's going to happen.
That's awful.
A bunch of random people are going to go, come with me for fun in my bugger.
Stop it. Not in 1974, we're not. But it does lead to another set piece, and this is the one that I'm pretty sure was the elixir that drew you to the film, and that is the choir scene. And from the music to the cartoonish a man with two of the members of the choir to the lovely little bit and the attention to detail when he's walking across the choir, when he's reading the sheet music from the bum, 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 bum.
And then his pitch changes because they have the choir separated into male and female, or women and men, and alto, soprano, exactly. And tenor and bass, right? And so they start off on one end, boom, 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 boom. And as they're trying to escape the hitman, boom. Meanwhile, on the other side, they're doing la 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 la. Right, so he's like boom, 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 la 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 la. But it opens at the first of all. It opens up with Leopold.
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 Leopold. The classic conductor. Look again, these tropes that you see. And Salvador, he's rocking the Salvador Dali.
He was another one that understood the assignment, largely nonverbal, and just be annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of annoyance with the.
No. Where he's snapping his little baton. Oh,
it's grand. It's grand.
And then here comes Terrence Hill trying to get Bud Spencer's attention. Meanwhile, runs a foul. She's a lovely girl. Oh, ain't nothing wrong. But the way she's like, oh, it's like in, you know, those old Foghorn Leghorn cartoons when they come up with old dried up hen. And you're like, oh, a man, right? I know. It's not
Foghorn
her fault.
Was not nice. Let's
no,
face it.
No, Foghorn was a dick, but at the same time, he was charming enough of a dick. But
it's a southern drawl, man.
Right? I say. Right? So, but at the same time, he's like not overly mean. He's like, yeah, okay, cool, but I need to talk to him. Like,
and there's, oh, God damn it.
But then the maid, every time the hitman's about to shoot, like from the behind the picture, she just straightens it up, just doing her business. That's comedy to me. That's hilarious. Because
it's in threes again.
Because it's cartoons.
And this scene, you hear this, it's a solid 7 minutes.
At least.
Nonstop. Just continuing the extended nature of everything.
With the trope of a hitman. Like, you don't need to know the backstory. You just know this dude is going to kill him with looking for a good angle to murder him because he's dressed all in black and he has, like, undead eyes.
His theme when he comes in.
It's the la 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 done in like classical music.
Oh, goddamn it.
Dun 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 dun.
Oh, it, the sight gag when they're initially when they initially started to menace the number two back before the bumper cars when they're all on the dance floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the passing around of the short girl.
I felt bad for the short girl because the short girl's cute.
She was great, yeah.
Short girl's cute.
And people were moving and grooving on that dance floor.
They were moving and grooving. It was like the swinging 70s. Like, you know, them Italian birds like to get down with the dance.
Yeah, I won't mention the stuff you were saying off mic on the Italian birds. I like to keep this as a family show if we can. That is to be said, I was watching one Bud Spencer. He still has the moves.
Yeah,
like, he was looking good out there. But it's that, again, that level of the lunacy.
Because first of all, Terrence Hill's dancing with the one redhead, and then he people are knocking like, hey, can I step in? Because the goon's dancing with the shorter girl because he's shorter. And Terrence Hill's like, oh, well, okay. Then he butts it to Bud Spencer, and he's such a tall dude that makes it even shorter where he's like, he does his like again, disappointed and like no fault of her own, because the next thing you know she's out moving and grooving. She leads the conga line, which again in only in cartoons does like a random conga line burst out with the dun 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 dun.
We did a commentary for Gremlins too. A conga line does indeed.
Shenanigans.
Cartoonish shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
How much do you like Gremlins 2?
I love me some Gremlins 2. And so again, the closest you can get to putting cartoons in the real world, I am all about it.
It's nuts. It's nuts. And then I think the next big set piece is probably like, would you say the balloon fight?
Yeah. The balloon
fight. Which, by the way,
starts out with some more vehicular mayhem.
Some Craig R. Baxley has to be a fan of this film because that whole hottest scene out of Action Jackson, cribbing a little from this one, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think the Italian lawyers were getting ready to call him.
How do you like your ribs with Italian seasoning?
But it's dangerous.
Yeah, it is. To drive a car through a busy restaurant filled with balloons.
Balloons everywhere.
Thousands of balloons.
So many balloons.
Thousands of balloons. And just go up and down.
And to destroy
everything.
Everything. To make sure nothing is standing.
On multiple levels with your car.
And we want the second level to come down crashing because of the car. And it goes, everything gets crashed.
And then after that, then a fight scene breaks out.
And question, and we realized it. One of the more shocking things when we get to see like behind the scenes is the level of safety with some with some of the international stunt people. Go to any of the Mad Max behind the scenes and you see the use of cardboard boxes.
Hopefully.
No, hope is involved keeping them up
right
and mobile after
and hitting your target.
Who? Oh.
Dude that flipped?
Wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But all the while people are falling on these balloons.
The pop, 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 pop.
I had to assume there was something under there, but at the same time, I didn't know if it was necessarily...
Forget it, Greg. It's Italy.
So if it was, oh, there's a good balloons you will fall on, you'll be fine.
Right? Maybe they like went to Argento for help. Like, you have people falling down from things all the time. What do you use?
Actually, technically, that'd probably be barbed wire under there.
I would love to hear the Goblin remix of Dune Buggy.
Ooh, that'd be hot. I guarantee, I'm wondering how big of a fan Argento was of, like, you know, Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer. If he tried to get them in, because they obviously don't like violence. They'd probably be so, no, he worked with them in Four Flies on Grey Velvet. He played God. Argento did work with Bud Spencer. I just watched it.
So maybe they're down.
Yes. I was like, wait, of course he did. You just watched it, Greg. Yes. That was the Rick Dalton moment for me going, holy shit. By the way, highly recommend checking out Four Flies on Grey Velvet. Jesse, you took that part of his giveaways. I highly recommend checking it out. I know basically everything escalates to the lunacy, to the fact that we get two dune buggies, which the most flammable and dangerous ride ever.
The MacGuffin in this movie is highly flammable.
Oh my god.
It's worse than a Tesla. Because like For as much vehicular manslaughter, I mean vehicular mayhem, as Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill do,
there's a lot of it
with their demolition derby or their like fucking off-road racing. Like that game. Remember that game where it was you could drive Bigfoot cars or RC cars and there was four wheels?
Yeah.
And then you off-roading. Could run people over off-road and shit. That was like how that is, because you could flip like over people and go the wrong way and fuck them up and shit. So, like, imagine someone who just kills at that game and giving them a dune buggy, which kind of is meant to take on the beach and a little bit light off-roading. For the minute it takes a sharp turn or to turn over or anybody bumps it, it just bursts into flame instantaneously.
Did Acme?
Right?
Put this thing out?
Probably.
Good Lord.
Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill come out looking like burnt matches, and then like writing back to the gangster like, "Dear Acme, please return this stuff." Because any Wile E. Coyote shit wouldn't surprise me.
No.
I'm surprised that they didn't befuddle the motorcycle gang by painting the rest of the street on a mountainside.
Would have been welcomed.
Right. It would have made sense.
Wouldn't have questioned it for a second.
Not one bit.
And like we said, we totally get if this isn't going to be anyone's cup of tea or a latte, whatever is your flavor. But if it is.
But it's going to be your root beer if you love root
beer. Oh, my Lord.
You know, if you love like slapstick and shit, your seltzer water.
And
you
know, I know
the only thing it didn't have was like a food fight or a pie fight.
No, I mean the chaos with the hot dogs and the beers. That's about as close
food,
as we get.
Yeah, there's food involved, but.
And I like I said, this has been such a fun journey for me, from just a random first time viewing, just loving it, to introducing it to you, from the backyard screening to now here on the main feed. If we didn't do Off Brand April, there's no way this we could be justified as having this
there's
on the feed.
Nothing to do with horror, not even a beaded curtain.
But this is available to view on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
Highly accessible. Highly recommend seeking it out.
So slapsticky and goofy, funny. 90 minutes of just giggles.
Yep.
Just giggles.
So many giggles. Now, next week, going into what is going to be a first-time viewing for me.
We're getting devilish.
And I it was on HBO all the time, and for some reason or other, I know I didn't. We'll get into that next week when we talk about it. So until that time, this is Greg D.
I'm Genius McGee.
And we'll see you in your dreams.
And you'll never get a forget away. Never, ever get away. Doom buggy.